Fishing for a show aimed at the outdoor enthusiast? Tune in to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World, Saturday at 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern on Rural Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 147, and on the Sirius XM app.
Welcome in to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World, brought to you by Bass Pro Shops. If you love fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors and want to make it even better, you're in the right place. With host Rob Keck, your adventure starts right here.
Good morning and welcome, and thanks for tuning into Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World, brought to you by Bass Pro Shops, where truly your adventure starts right here. I'm Rob Keck, your host, and happy February the 3rd. The day after Groundhog Day, and, you know, who knows if old Punxsutawney Phil has his prediction right? You know, after all the cold weather that we have had this winter, I know I'm ready for spring, and I know many of you listeners are too, but, you know, whether we have six more weeks of winter or spring just being around the corner, it's just like the old Baptist preacher that married my wife Susan and I, and he said, if you have no control of the situation, you say it's just like you like it. Well, let me tell you, Bass Pro Shops, it's just like we like it. And, you know, February is also just a great month to call predators like coyotes, red foxes, gray foxes, even mountain lions. And on today's show, we have four-time World Coyote Calling Champion who just happens to be the host of Fox Pro's award-winning Fur Takers that airs on Outdoor Channel. And that's my good friend Al Morris. He's going to join us here in this next segment. But for the entire show, before we get there, we're going to bring on my favorite lady. And this first segment, we begin every show at the beginning of the month. Bass Pro Shops Communications Manager, Katie Mitchell. She's going to get us started right now. Katie, welcome. How the heck are you?
Well, right now I feel like a frozen fish stick in the cold, deep freeze weather we've been in. You know, one of the things I was listening, you said, the preacher said, you know, it's just like the way you like it. Well, that's kind of like the weather is around, you know, Missouri and a lot of parts of the country. But here we have a saying, if you don't like the weather, hang around 5 minutes, it'll change. It's always going to be just how you like it. So right now my thoughts are headed towards spring.
Well, I can tell you you're ready for spring, and so am I. You know, turkey season and fish biting, and, you know, there's so much going on at Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's. You know, we heard recently about some good news at the Wonders of Wildlife. Why don't you tell us, share with our listeners what's happening there?
Yeah, this is amazing, fantastic news. We're all just tickled to death here. You know, speaking of wanting something to do or needing something to do out of the cold winter weather, nothing better than visiting our brand new Johnny Morris Wonders of Wildlife National Museum and Aquarium. It's good to go, you know, whatever the weather. But recently, we were most honored to be voted America's number one best new attraction America. I mean, number one. And we've just been open since September, so this is quite the honor. Quite the honor, and it's national recognition from USA Today. We couldn't be more proud, and this has such an impact, you know, on spreading the conservation message and enlightening not only, you know, adults and people that may not be in tune to hunting and fishing and all the conservation messages there, but the young ones, the children that come and are able to see these fantastic aquarium, some 35,000 live fish, and all the exhibits that we have throughout the museum and aquarium. Couldn't be prouder.
I'll tell you, I'm so proud. And, of course, Johnny, his vision, what he's put together here, I mean, it is the conservation marvel of the world. I've talked to people that have traveled the world, been to natural history museums everywhere, aquariums everywhere, and their words back to me is that there's nothing like it anywhere in the world. But I understand there's some penguins that have arrived that weren't there at the grand opening. Well, tell us about that.
The penguins have arrived, and they are the star of the show right now. Who doesn't love to, you know, sit and watch these guys? I mean, they are so animated and so much fun. We have 11 Gentoo penguins. These are the third largest in the species, but they're so entertaining, and they range in age of the ones that we have, 2 and 3 years old, all the way up to the old lady that's 23 years old, as we call her, the old lady. But they are delighting audiences, young and old. On every visit, it's always a big mob around the penguins as they do their, you know, water acrobatics and just thrill and amaze the crowd. Lots of fun. So that's our newest exhibit. It is open now, and it is a hit.
I'll tell you, they've got to love this cold weather we've been having. And speaking of conservation, The Conservation Partner of the Year were announced by Bass Pro Shops recently. Why don't you share that with our listeners as well, Katie?
Right. You know, it's always a highlight of our holiday lunch and the associate lunch and everything, and something that Mr. Morris loves to do every year is to name the Conservation Partners of the Year. And this year, we were absolutely honored to announce Jimmy Carter, our 39th President of the United States. He did so much for conservation and really sought, you know, to protect our outdoor heritage and did so many wonderful initiatives, implementation of the 78 National Parks and Recreation Act, amendments to clean water, passage of the legislation for the National Parks, Wildlife Refuges, Wilderness Areas, and National Forests in Alaska. He was honored, in addition to Stuart Leon, who had a 25-year career with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He is the executive director of the Southwest Tribal Fisheries Commission, which is a coalition of tribes, pueblos, and nations that are committed to sustainable native and recreational fisheries in Indian country, a very big priority, a very great achievement. Stuart Leon and President Jimmy Carter are 2017 Conservation Partners of the Year at Bass Pro Shops.
Awesome. And, you know, I had a chance to walk President Carter around with Johnny there at the grand opening, 93 years young, and I tell you, he's just as spry as you can imagine. Look, we only have a minute left. Big news, NASCAR coming up, that big race down in Florida. Why don't you tell us about it very quickly?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's spring is coming, and with it, you know, a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of the rumble and roar of NASCAR. So it'll be the 60th running of the Great American Race. Daytona 500 kicks off February the 18th. We have added to our fleet this year. We're so proud to announce that the Richard Childress Racing Partnership, we are now sponsoring the Ryan Newman with the number 31 Chevrolet Camaro in the Monster Energy Cup NASCAR Series. He will be racing, flying the Cabela's and Bass Pro Colors, as well as Martin Truex Jr., you know, returning 2017 NASCAR champion. And, of course, the Dillon Brothers tie in Austin, set for a great weekend of racing coming up February the 18th, and can't wait to get the NASCAR season underway.
Look, so much to talk about, but we are out of time. Katie, thanks so much for being with us today and keeping us updated, and happy Groundhog Day weekend to you. Folks, when we return, we're going to meet the four-time World Coyote Calling Champion, Al Morris. This and a whole lot more coming right up. I'm Rob Keck, your host here on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World.
Years ago, sportsmen led the first revolt to save what was left of North America's dwindling wildlife resources, and it took purpose and commitment. This crusade began with Theodore Roosevelt's forming the Boone and Crockett Club in 1887. Since then, sportsmen and women have been at the forefront of every environmental revolution in this country, providing the vision, funding, and manpower to establish and run what has become the most successful system of wildlife management in the history of mankind. Yet to this day, our story remains relatively unknown, especially to those who don't hunt or fish. We must tell this story, but we need to do more than that. We must insist that others who claim to be conservationists but work tirelessly on campaigns to end all hunting honestly examine the evidence and then ask themselves, where would the wildlife they cherish be without sportsmen's dollars and without sportsmen's efforts? Conservation had a beginning, but it has no end. To learn more, visit BooneandCrockettClub.com.
Back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World on Rural Radio, Sirius XM.
And welcome back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. If you just tuned in, we're introducing our next guest, and I can tell you one thing. This guy has forgotten more about calling coyotes than anybody I've ever known. But I can tell you, he knows a lot more about a lot of other game species, too, man. He's certainly an accomplished elk caller and hunter, an accomplished turkey caller and turkey hunter, but he's a four-time World Coyote Calling Champion. He's the host of Fox Pro's Fur Takers on the Outdoor Channel, celebrating their 10th season. I want to bring to you my good friend, Al Morris. Al, welcome to Outdoor World.
Thanks, Rob. How are you?
Man, I'll tell you what, I couldn't be better sitting here. Well, maybe I could be if we were sitting out on a hillside somewhere, and you were just leaning down on that call. Why don't you just give us a little sound of what these folks are going to hear during this show? Because calling coyotes, boy, it's like the, especially in the East, it's a growing sport. It's popular, and this is the time of year to do it. Al, just give us a little calling right now.
One tip, if you're going to go out and call coyotes, the number one thing a coyote will come to
is a lone howl. So let's give him a lone howl out there. Wow. Look, I'm ready to go. And by the way, Al's going to open up for me at the Western Hunting and Conservation Expo with a little bit of that. He's going to do some elk calling out there. And I can tell you, as in past years, just thrills the crowd. And you talk about thrilling the crowd. I got to congratulate you on your first Golden Moose Award on Outdoor Channel, Small Game and Predators. Tell us about that award.
It's special. You know, we've been part of the channel for 10 years, and they just don't give those golden mooses out to any show. You know, it took us 10 years to win our first one.
Yeah.
You know, there's some the big shows, they seem to win pretty regularly. And the big game, you know, they got the big glamorous moose and the elk and the whitetail's king, isn't it?
Yeah.
In our world. But to win a small game predator golden moose is special for us. And it's just fun to be the only predator hunting show on, you know, a big game channel. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, a gold moose, for all of you listeners out there that don't know, I mean, this is like the top award in outdoor programming. Tell us a little bit about the segment that won you this gold moose.
We were in Kansas, or in Nebraska, actually, and we were doing some springtime dogging with our – I've got decoy dogs. They're white mountain curs, half jag terrier cur crosses, and we go out there and we get those coyote when a coyote has a pups. You know, you can base the whole year of coyote calling on one event, and that's the coyotes having their pups. And we were out there in Nebraska. We had our decoy dogs, and we actually killed a triple on that stand that was aired for the golden moose. And we set up right next to a den, and we killed two females and a big male. You know, a dominant pair of coyotes will keep a pup from a previous litter, and so you can kill mom and dad, and that pup that's left over will grow those pups that are in the ground. And anyway, we got all three of the adults, and we went back and got that den, and you do serious management that time of year, and it was just a fun segment to get that triple to come in, and I did it with my decoy dogs, and it was cool.
How do you hunt with dogs? I mean, most guys, I mean, we know of calls, you know, the electronic, the mouth calls like you just used, but how do you employ dogs along with the calling?
You know, people use dogs in different ways. They course them, you know, they'll drive along and see a coyote and let their dogs out, and the dogs will run the coyotes down, and they use greyhounds and all kinds of those. They use hounds. In Vermont, they use hounds to hunt coyotes. Our decoy dogs, what we're doing is taking the Fox Pros, howling, getting those coyotes to talk back to us, and then my decoy dogs go out there, and they basically interact and fight with the coyotes, and they'll come right back to us, and they bring those coyotes right to
us. How do you train a dog to do that?
I could tell you, Rob, but I'd have to kill you. No, it's the same thing. You just got to spend time. Actually, I take the Fox Pro. I'll set the Fox Pro out there 400 yards, and I reward the dogs by going to the coyote vocalizations on the Fox Pro. And after a while, they equate, when they hear a coyote howling, they equate that as fun. And these dogs live. They're born, bred, and fed to go to a coyote and interact with them. It's exciting. It's fun.
Well, it really is. You know, the general public, and we may have some listeners out there on rural radio, they're saying, wait a minute.
I don't understand.
Wait a minute. I don't understand this. I thought coyotes were endangered. Oh. Well, I guess they're endangered if they're in front of my 223.
Yeah.
But tell us about coyote populations a little bit. I mean, we're hunting something here that is in great abundance. It's not endangered. It's not listed on the endangered species list. Tell us, I mean, we have lots of coyotes, right, Al?
Coyotes, I mean, they have done nothing but expand their numbers. I mean, when settlers first came to this country, there was a few coyotes, but the wolf was dominant. Mm-hmm. Out, you know, throughout the prairies and all that, the wolf was king. And what did the wolf do? He killed the coyotes if he got a chance. And the coyote kills the red fox, and the red fox kills the gray fox. Those bigger canines will pick on the smaller canines. Well, what's happened in the last 150 years is we got rid of the wolves. Once we did it once, we're going to have to do it again, Rob. You know,
uh-huh.
The largest Shiras moose population in the whole world is gone. Yellowstone, they used to fly around. They, in 1994, they flew a helicopter around the Larimer Basin. 297 moose they counted in one flight. They did it this same flight, same time. Guess how many moose they counted this year?
Zero.
Four.
Mm.
290 some moose when they flew it in 1994. They counted four out of the air this year.
It's quite amazing. And of course, you know, that reintroduction of that wolf into that Yellowstone area, that whole ecosystem, it's changed the dynamics of not only moose, but elk. Mule deer.
They were feeding 40,000 elk. In 1994, my buddy fed 40,000 to 60,000 elk in the elk refuge. This year, they fed 2,300 or whatever it was.
My gosh. Well,
no, it's a bad deal. Anyway, so the wolf was king, and there wasn't that many coyotes. But what's happened in the last 150 years is we got rid of the wolves. The coyote became the dominant predator in the West, and it started moving east. And there, I mean, there's always been coyotes in Michigan and in some of those New York. But those coyotes actually have wolf DNA in them from the great northern wolves up there. And the coyotes from the West and the coyotes from the Northeast have kind of met in the middle. And now Virginia, you know, the Carolinas.
Oh, I know. We've got them there big time.
I mean, I've
got them in my own backyard. Christmas Day, we shot one between the swing set and the deck with a .22 coming in there close.
But when you were a kid, nobody talked about coyotes.
Well, they didn't.
They weren't there.
Well, look, we're going to talk a whole lot more about coyotes, coyote calling, coyote hunting, and some of the competitions that you've been involved with. We're going to take our next break here. When we return, we're going to continue this really educational and enlightening conversation with my good friend Al Morris right here on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. I'm Rob Keck, and we will be right back.
SiriusXM's Rural Radio is your guide to the agricultural markets.
I'm John Jenkinson. It's all about the rural lifestyle and the ag industry. It's not just farming.
Your money.
Hi, this is Christina Loren with the Market Day Report. Our coverage of news, weather, and the commodity markets targeted to rural America.
Your information.
I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Darren and I host the Ag PhD radio show.
Open up the farm and the challenges we face. You can learn how to do it for yourself.
Rural Radio, SiriusXM 147, or listen on the SiriusXM app.
Hey everybody, I'm Easton Corbin, and I grew up in the smallest county in the state of Florida, and that's a long ways from Nashville, let alone elk country. But I've been hunting all my life, and I've always dreamed of chasing elk. When I came out west and heard my first bugle, I was hooked. I just had to roll with it. Now I want to make sure that dream will be here for tomorrow's hunters. If you feel the same way, make a difference and join the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation by going to www.rmef.org.
Back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World on Rural Radio, SiriusXM.
And welcome back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. If you've just tuned in, we're visiting here with my good friend, the four-time World Coyote Calling Champion and the host of Fox Pro's Fur Takers, found on the Outdoor Channel, and they're enjoying their 10th season, my good friend, Al Morris. Al, looking back over the years, how'd you get started calling coyotes? I mean, it's something that, something had to inspire you to get into this.
Well, I'll tell you, Rob, the first, Wayne Carlton taught me how to use a diaphragm call 34 years ago. I was 16. My dad had an elk tag out in the Book Cliffs, and we actually rode our horses in 15 miles into this wilderness area. We set up our tents. Dad and another buddy went one way, and I just went out of camp. I just hiked up this ridge, and there was this basin, and I was just goofing around. I just learned how to use a diaphragm call. And I really wasn't making elk sounds. I was just making a lot of sound out of a diaphragm. And it must have sounded like something dying, because here came seven pups and two adults. Nine coyotes came at me off this ridge. And when they got about 100 yards from me, they all spread out. It was like a skirmish line.
They were coming to make the kill.
They were circling the wagons. And I'll tell you what, that was such a moving experience to take a little diaphragm call, put it in my mouth, and have nine coyotes come right to me. I mean, one of them got close as 10 yards. When they saw me, of course, they all split. They freaked out. I was freaking out because I had nine coyotes within shotgun distance.
Yeah.
And it changed me forever. I was so thrilled by that experience of having those coyotes that close that it possessed me. It really did. I went to college. They said, pick an animal. At Utah State University, when I was in wildlife management, they said, at the very first class, the guy says, I want you to pick an animal, and you're going to have to study him and do research. You know, we didn't have computers in 1985.
Yeah.
Well, all we had was libraries where we had to go do the card. you know what I'm talking about, Rob. You're dated, too. And so I picked the coyote. And I wanted to learn everything I could about a coyote. And it just become a lifelong, you know, how do you know you're going to want to learn about an animal and then he kind of becomes your life?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, you know, the impact of having an experience like that, as in your case, has been life-changing. I mean, your career has taken off and really been around that. Tell us about growing up. And you mentioned your dad going on an elk hunt.
Yeah.
You know, where you grew up and what was it like when you were a kid?
No, I was lucky. I had a dad that milked 60 head of Holstein cows every day of my life. He milked 60 head of Holstein by himself every day till I was 10 years old. He sold the dairy. And me and him kind of grew up. I grew up with my dad as my best friend, and we started hunting together when I was 10, 11, 12, up through when I went to college. I mean, it was funny because I learned it when I was 16 years old. He read an article. Rich LaRocco wrote about a guy taking a turkey diaphragm and calling elk with it. Well, that was Wayne, and that was an article in 1983.
And I was with Wayne when he did it the first time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, and we got to honor him last year at that Western Hunting Conservation Expo, and I got to tell my story about how Wayne taught me how to use that diaphragm call. But me and my dad learned together, humble beginnings, you know, a dairy farmer and his kid. My dad really was the milkman when I grew up, you know.
What'd you hunt back then?
You know, pheasants. You know, we were the small game. My dad always went deer hunting. And in 1976, I remember my dad shot a 34-inch mule deer in central Utah with a Winchester lever action Model 88 243.
Oh, wow.
I mean, my dad killed some big monster mule deer with that 243 of his. And that old Winchester is still my honored gun at the house. And you know, it was a rich tradition. I came from humble beginnings, a hardworking people. You know, I told you earlier,
yeah.
I'm related to the three Morrises that signed the Declaration of Independence. I'm pretty proud of that. And hardworking people I come from. My mom was an AP English teacher. She taught AP English at a high school there in Orem High for 34 years. And both my parents, you know, were all about dreaming big. I lost my dad in 1999, 58 years old. He had an abdominal aortic aneurysm. Mm. And the last conversation I had with my dad was, you know, son, go ahead. I was plumbing at the time, and he goes, chase some dreams. You're one of the best elk callers in the country. You ought to be outfitting and guiding, and me and your mom will support you 110%. Go chase some dreams. And that's how I ended up at Three Forks Ranch, guiding elk hunters, because my dad was dead the next day from an abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Oh, man.
I looked at my wife at the time. I said, grab on and hang on, because we're going to go chase some dreams.
Yeah.
Life's too short.
Man, what a story. What a story. And I know you miss your dad. I miss mine so much. I mean, the times you get to share, how special they are.
Well, yeah. to put a diaphragm call in your mouth and dad hawked it 3 feet out of his mouth, you know, he had dentures, and you didn't know how dentures would affect a diaphragm calling. And all of a sudden I started making noise, and he called Wayne, and it's a funny story. And anyway, I started using that diaphragm, and we learned how to hunt elk together. The first elk I ever called in, he was there with me. And of course, then he killed his big bull. And then the guys that were hanging out with us, the friends and family, are like, I know you're in college, but you got to come elk hunting. And I'll pay you $500 if you come. And that's how it starts, you know. And all of a sudden, this guy goes, I got an outfitter out here in Colorado. Wants you to come guide. And that's how I became a full-time guide. And eventually, I guided Dave and Carmen Forbes from Hunter Specialties and turned it into a living.
And that's how you got into the industry.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what all did you do? And we're just about out of time. We've got another minute here before we have to take our next break. But tell us about that experience with Dave and Carmen, guiding them to get you into hunter specialties.
Yeah. Well, they came elk hunting with me at the Three Forks Ranch, and they saw I had 14, 18 guides there that loved me. I had the best guide crew in the country, hardworking kids that we showed people an adventure of a lifetime. And they said, we really like you. We really like what you do. Come work for us. And I said, are you kidding? I'm going to be an elk guide the rest of my life. And they said, no, we want to pay you to hunt coyotes and elk for us on video. And I said, you had me, we'll pay you. And so it's been an adventure. You know, it's not, you've made enough TV and video. You know how hard it is, Rob, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, you know, there's no doubt that what you have done has inspired so many people. Just like you, learning from Wayne Carlson. You look at the people that just come and hang at your doorstep to want to know how to learn how to call. And when we come back from this next break, I want to talk about that call that got you started. And we'll talk about all the other types of calls that are out there, because it's intriguing. And, you know, once you begin to call, instead of you being the hunter, you become the hunted. And I think that that, just like with turkey calling, with duck calling, elk calling, all those kinds of things really change the whole complexion of the game. It's not like you're just sitting in a deer stand waiting for something to come by. I mean, you're actually taking the game to the game, and now they're looking for you. And there's a lot of things that go beyond just that call. We'll talk about setting up, using the wind in the right direction.
Woodsmanship.
All those kind of things that are absolutely critical. Well, look, we're going to move to this next break. We return. We're going to continue this conversation here with my good friend Al Morris, and there's a whole lot more coming up. I'm Rob Keck, your host here on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World.
This is a public service announcement test from TakeMeFishing.org to determine if you need a fishing license and boat registration before heading out on the water. Let's begin. Are you a bear? Do you have a beak? Does your name rhyme with Auld Beagle? Do you dart in front of cars? Here's a tough one. Do you have plumage? Do you rub your body against things to mark them? Do you have webbed feet? No, I mean like a... Were you hatched? Do you have fur? I'm not talking back hair. Does your boat fly south for the winter with the other boats? Regardless of how you answer, you need to be licensed and registered because it helps local conservation efforts protect the very natural resources you enjoy boating and fishing in for generations to come. Do your part at TakeMeFishing.org.
Back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World on Rural Radio, Sirius XM.
And welcome back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. And we're having a great visit with a four-time World Coyote Calling Champion, the host of Fox Pro's Fur Takers, seen on the Outdoor Channel, now in its 10th season. And by the way, just recently been awarded the Golden Moose Award in the category of Small Game and Predators. He's my good friend, Al Morris. Al, calling is really, really intriguing. And I know, coming from the turkey hunting world and having been a world champion turkey caller, you know, there's a lot that it's taken to get to that level of being a champion. Talk to me about this little thing you put into your mouth. We refer to it as a diaphragm call. How you got started on this thing and how it evolved then into calling coyotes and how you actually operate this. I mean, we could spend a whole show on this,
right?
But take us through running this diaphragm.
No, you know, I wanted to mention, Rob, that I learned a lot from you on that hunt we did together with Hunter Specialties in Wyoming.
Yeah.
You know, to get different perspectives. You know, I learned a lot from you on that hunt. You'll never know. And it's funny to me how when you just go with somebody that has a little different perspective on the calling world, how it changes what you did. But this old diaphragm, it fits in the roof of your mouth. And you press with your tongue against that little piece of latex, and that vibration makes that noise. And, of course, when you're elk calling, of course, that's a cow. And then you can do the bugles. But what I found out early is I could flip this diaphragm over, get the short reads up, and I could howl with it. It keeps a constant note. I can wolf howl with that too. You can get that lower note and hold it out longer and make it sound just like an old wolf. And this diaphragm, it's really cool. You know, of course, from your world, you know, this diddle.
Well, the thing is really cool about it too is you got both hands free.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you've got to be able to operate, you know, your firearm, your gun that you're going to be shooting. So, and the other thing is what you said about being able to change the tonal values that are coming out of that thing. You know, if you want it to be high, if you want it to be lower, if you know, all those kind of things or
it's
something.
It's the most versatile call that's out there. It really is. And to learn in 1983, you know, you were with Wayne when he started doing Kiki runs, and then he realized it could sound like an elk. And,
yeah.
And the first sound I ever made on a diaphragm is when I turned it around and sucked in. And I did that over the phone with Wayne, and he said, don't do that. I'll be calling 911 from Montrose, Colorado, Springville, Utah, to have somebody Roto-Rooter that thing out of your throat.
And it costs $500 to get that thing out of your stomach.
So, so he said, turn it around and blow with the same pressure, and that's how I learned to get the right pressure. I started making noise. I remember my dad ran into the bedroom where I was on the telephone with Wayne, and he goes, what are you doing? I said, I don't know. It just works. And I was really lucky. And then I've been really lucky to hunt with guys like Eddie Salter and you know, through the years, and these legends in the turkey world that taught me a lot about patience. You know, I'll never forget being in Texas with Eddie Salter, and there was three, if there was one bird, there was 300 birds roosting in this, and they all flew out, and they heard us calling, and they went the other way.
Yeah.
And Eddie's just sitting there, and he'd, I'm like, Eddie, we got to get up, and, you know, and he said, Big Al, sit your butt down. I'm going to call you a tucky. And it was a half hour later, 45 minutes later, he would just every now and then go, world champion caller. And I'm like, dude, we can do better than this. And he said, Big, sit your butt down. We're going to call you. Anyway, he called in about 45 minutes later, an hour later, he called in three of the biggest long beards you ever seen. And I got to shoot him on video. And you learn so much. Patience. You don't have to run and gun. Of course, when you're young, I think we try to run things down. And the fun part has been to learn how to call animals to you. You become the prey. You've got predators hunting you. I love deer hunting. I killed my biggest deer ever this year in Texas, a big one, 64-inch buck. And he's 13 points and just
cool. Awesome
with the new Buck Pro.
Uh-huh.
We've got a new electronic deer call for deer where it's legal. And I was down in Texas. I called this buck in, and that was exciting. But when it's got teeth and it's hunting you, it's real exciting.
Well, it is. I mean, the tables have turned. But before we get into that even a little bit deeper, if somebody wanted to get started on a mouth call, what do you advise? I mean, for a lot of people, they put it in their mouth and it tickles.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, my gosh, I can't do this.
Most people gag.
I know. What do you advise?
You know, you've got to try different sizes, different brands. Everybody's diaphragm's a little different, the way it fits in your mouth. You know this.
Sure.
You've got to experiment and find that. And find somebody that knows how to use one and spend some intense time. Come find me. You know, it's like you said, the biggest thing we can do in this life is pass on some of this knowledge and what we've learned. And I've been real successful in getting people, come buy a diaphragm from me. I'll be at the Western Hunting and Conservation Expo. Come buy a diaphragm from me. We'll sit down and we'll sit there and hammer it till you're making the sounds you need to make.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you've got a few other calls with you, too. I mean, you're not limited now. You know, when we talk about calling, there's other the non-electric calls, and you've got a lanyard here with, golly, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about those.
You know, there's some close read calls, you know. good for party favors, 4th of July, New Year's, things like that. But if you use some inflection, use your hand, it becomes a rabbit in distress. I mean, it's just, that's, you know.
Yeah.
October, even August, September, October, November, I primarily use prey distress. And then I've got some open read calls. You can call bull elk with this. This is a good cow elk. But I can take that same call, use my lower lip, and it becomes a rabbit distress. I mean, it's just versatile. And, each one of these calls, it's like going fishing. You don't take one lure, do you?
Yeah.
I don't go calling with just one call. I like to have the diaphragm. With a diaphragm, a Fox Pro, and these hand calls, there isn't a coyote walking the planet I can't call in.
Well, just like me as a turkey hunter, if you look at my vest, I don't have one box call. I've got two.
Yeah.
I don't have one mouth yupper. I've got a half dozen.
Yeah.
I don't have one slate. I've got a slate and an aluminum and, I mean, a crystal.
Glass.
I mean, it's just all kinds. And you've got, on any given day, one may work, and the next day it doesn't even get a response from them.
What we're trying to do is trip their trigger. And you don't know what's going to trip that trigger until you find that call of the day. And, you know, everybody asked me, Al, how do you call these coyotes in? What's your biggest key? And I said, you know, it silence kills as much as sound, which, you know, there's
that empty time in between is really important.
Yep. And then you got to find that, you know, every hen has a higher, you know, hens in different parts of the country have higher pitches, lower pitches in their yelps and cuts. And so you got to find that. You got to find your niche. You got to have some woodsmanship out there.
Absolutely.
While you're hunting.
Absolutely. I want to talk about that in this next segment. We've got just another 20 seconds here. Anything you want to add to that? What's your favorite one? What's your favorite call out of everything on that lanyard, everything you've got in your non-electronic now? What What's your favorite?
Give me a closed reed call that does that good rabbit distress, and I'll put a lot of meat on. I'll put a lot of fur in the back of that truck.
We're going to talk about putting fur in the back of the truck in this next segment too. Al, we've got to move to our next break. We return, folks. We're going to continue our conversation here with 4-time World Coyote Calling Champion, my good friend Al Morris, and we're here on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. It's Rob Kack, and we will be right back.
We are the young minds that will shape tomorrow's world. But today, the world is in your hands. What's your vision for the future? Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been the world leader in wetlands and waterfowl conservation. And we've had the same vision for the future for more than 75 years. A future with clean water, abundant wildlife, plenty of places to enjoy nature, and wetlands, sufficient to fill the skies with waterfowl today, tomorrow, and forever. Sure, there's still a whole lot of work to be done, but we know we can turn things around together because we are the next generation of DU conservationists. And with a little help from you, our future is looking really bright. Ducks Unlimited, working for conservation for generations to come.
A public service from Ducks Unlimited.
Back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World on Rural Radio, Sirius XM.
And welcome back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. If you've just tuned in, we're visiting with the 4-time World Coyote Calling Champion, the host of Fox Pro's Fur Takers, found on Outdoor Channel, now in their 10th season, and winner just recently awarded the Golden Moose Award in the category of Small Game and Predators, my good friend Al Morris. Right before the break, we talked about setting up. There's a whole lot more to this game than just the calling, positioning, checking the wind. I mean, there's so many different things. Your camouflage setup. Talk to us about getting in the right position.
You know, the biggest thing to calling coyotes is you have to call where they are. So you want to go out and find where those coyotes are living. Now, your uncle may have coyotes on his 3 or 4. I realize it's different across the country. And I actually had a guy from Virginia that his uncle had 300 acres, and he'd deer hunt there, he'd see coyotes. And what we found out is those coyotes were only there about every third day. You know, and they'd spend time there, and they were on a 3 or 4 day loop
right
through their territory there. And so it took us a few years for him to get one of them coyotes called in and killed. But the best place to find a coyote is where you see a coyote. And then when you see their tracks, where you see their scat, a lot of guys shoot their deer, leave them overnight, and they go back, and there's no deer.
You
got a set of horns, and that's it. Coyotes have become a real issue. And so setting up yourself for success is the number one thing you can do. And I used to worry about the wind a lot. And what I can tell you is a coyote will always end up downwind. So if you can force them to expose themselves before they get downwind and smell you, you're going to kill more coyotes. Now, every setup is different. But I don't care whether it's the thick hardwoods. The thicker the country is, I get in there with my shotgun and want to call them tight. It's better if you have a buddy that can be 50, 60, 100 yards downwind of you with a shotgun in that thick. I don't care whether it's thick hardwoods. I hunt sagebrush in Nevada that's 10, 12 feet tall. We'd get on buckets with our shotguns and call the coyotes by us and shoot them with shotguns when they'd run by.
Uh-huh.
And we actually took fourth place in the world championship there in Elko, Nevada, 1 year doing that. I don't care how thick it is. Get in there with the coyotes. It's the same thing with turkeys. You got to be where the turkeys are to kill a turkey.
Absolutely.
And it's the same thing with these coyotes. Even though there's coyotes pretty much across the United States, in every state, you can find these coyotes. And knowing where those coyotes want to be and setting up so they have to expose themselves where you can shoot them with your rifle or your shotgun, it's hard to explain that on a radio show. But watch our videos. Go to GoFoxPro.com. Go to our YouTube page, Fox Pro Fur Takers on YouTube. We've got 9 seasons of TV up there for you to watch, and you can watch me in action doing what we do and learn from that. We can shortcut your learning curve. You can listen to the sound. You can listen to the scenarios I play on the Fox Pro and what I do with these diaphragm calls. And I haven't found a coyote. I can't call in yet, Rob.
Boy, I'll tell you what. I look back when we started. We didn't have the advantage of all these videos, YouTube videos, television that, was very limited in that area. And, boy, what great learning tools people have today. And, of course, when you're calling, a lot of times it's not only a coyote that shows up.
Oh,
you
yeah.
deal with bobcats. You deal with foxes, mountain lions, bears. Talk to us about that mixed bag as well.
Well, you know, basically what you're doing, you know, you can base the whole year of coyote hunting around one event, and that's having their pups. And so they'll breed. February 15th is the peak of the breeding season, and everything from there on, it's a 62-day gestation period, just like a dog, and then they have their pups in the ground, and then for the first 13 days, they don't open their eyes, and then the first 30 days, they're just poking around the den. 60 days, they're, you know, 20, 30 yards around the den. 90 days, they're starting to hunt for themselves.
Mm.
They grow really fast, and in that world, you've got bobcats, you've got foxes, and when you're out there and you play 70% of a coyote's diet is small ground-dwelling mammals, moles, voles, mice, things like that. The other 25%, they'll eat anything. They're omnivores. They'll eat anything, grass, watermelon. You know.
Sure. I've got all my trail cams set up there in South Carolina where I'm trying to, you know, video deer. I've got them eating pears. I've got them eating crab apples.
They'll eat everything.
It's amazing. But go ahead.
No, and so the bottom line is they're omnivores. They'll eat everything. But when you're out there calling them, there's four things that, you know, coyotes are territorial. So I really think that's why the lone howls work. They're hungry. They've got to eat. So they're going to come to those prey distress sounds. They're protective of their pups, and then they breed during breeding season. Well, when you start blowing, one of those aspects is feeding. And when you play a rabbit distress or you play a deer distress, if you play a bird distress, vole squeaks, anything like that, not only will coyotes come to it, but you'll get bobcats. You'll get the foxes. You'll get these other critters coming in up there trying to call wolves around Yellowstone Park. We were actually in Island Park, Idaho. We called in a big old grizzly bear, and we saw him. He just come rolling by, and then nothing that'll wake you up.
Oh, I'm sure.
When you got a big old grizzly bear going by you, and he's looking for that deer distress. He's looking for that distress sound, and I want folks to remember out there: the number one thing a coyote will come to is a lone howl, and remember that. I think some of these coyotes, when I hunted in Alabama with Vandy Collins down there, the Dove Czar, those coyotes down there was catfish ponds everywhere, and those coyotes had plenty to eat. So the thing that really got them to come most of the time was vocalizations. And so if people will stick to the vocalizations, if you'll learn how to vocalize with a diaphragm, if you learn how to vocalize with an open reed, if you'll learn how to use those Fox Pros with those great coyote vocals, those are actual coyotes that we've recorded that are on that Fox Pro. If you'll use those actual recordings and learn how it fits in, that woodsmanship, how do you teach that to somebody, Rob?
Well, it's tough.
To be sneaky and to set up to where they can see and try and position that coyote where they can get a look at it. All I can tell you folks out there is get you a Fox Pro, get you a diaphragm, get you some of these hand calls, learn how to use them, watch us on that YouTube video, and then go out and trial and error it. That's how you learned.
Sure, absolutely.
That's how I learned.
Well, let me ask you this here. We just have a minute here before we take our final break of the show. But do you use the electronic call in combination with your mouth calls?
Most every setup now.
You do?
Yeah. I found out it's more productive.
Just another dimension you've added.
Well, I'm not relying on just the electronics. I'm also, there's something so authentic about a diaphragm call. You've done it with turkeys. You've done it, you know, you've seen it with the elk calls. Now, it's the same thing with a coyote. If you can use some electronics with a authentic diaphragm mouth call, my success goes up.
Yeah. Well, great. We all want success to go up. And folks listening to this show, I know your success is going to go up. We've got to take our final break of the show. But folks, when we return, we're going to continue this very, very educational discussion with my good friend Al Morris, right here on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. It's Rob Keck, and we will be right back.
Today's hunters are facing some real challenges. Nationally, we lose 6,000 acres of upland habitat every day. Hunter numbers are not keeping pace with population growth. Each of these puts our hunting lifestyle in danger. With your help, the National Wild Turkey Federation is tackling these challenges head-on with its Save the Habitat, Save the Hunt initiative. Our volunteers have committed to increase wild turkey populations and protect our hunting heritage by improving 4 million acres of habitat.
creating 1.5 million new hunters and opening 500,000 new acres to public hunting. Join the NWTF today to help make these bold goals a reality. Visit NWTF.org for more information and to find out how you can help protect our way of life.
Back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World on Rural Radio, Sirius XM.
And welcome back to Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. You just tuned in. We're having a great visit with a four-time world coyote calling champion, the host of Fox Pro's Fur Takers on the Outdoor Channel, my good friend, Al Morris. Al, looking at finding a place to go, I've heard you talk about hunting coyotes as the poor man's big game. Talk to us about that. You know, access has been a real issue for many people in the country. Out west, you've got a lot of public land. Talk to us about access and places to hunt, how you select a spot. I know you've mentioned about you got to find the sign, you got to go where coyotes are. Talk to us a little bit about that.
You know, if you don't have that uncle that has that acreage, you need to go around and knock on some doors. And I like to think that people, when I was a kid, that's how you got access. You went around and knocked on doors. Well, most people are so protective of their turkeys and their deer, they're not going to let you on their door.
Sure, absolutely.
But if you can go up to that landowner and say, you know, I'd like to help you with your coyotes, it's amazing the doors have been opened to me by saying, I'd like to take care of your problems. And they'll let you out there. And that's why I think it's going to become the poor man's big game. There's usually no license requirements. In most of the states, you need a small game license. But out west in Utah, Nevada, Wyoming, Montana, no license requirements. You can go hunt coyotes all you want.
Isn't that amazing?
It's awesome. And so that's why I say it's becoming the poor man's big game. I really think more people, if you will approach it that way and go to these landowners and tell them, and I'll tell you what, folks, you want to go out there and kill those coyotes because you're not going to get them all. You can't. If that guy has 100 coyotes on his acreage and you kill 75 of them, the 25 left will get you back to 101 pup crop.
Wow.
I mean, that's a hell of a renewable resource, right?
It is.
So you want to take advantage of that. And you want to tell those people, we're not trying to kill them all. We're just going to try and manage some. Each one of those coyotes is killing 3 to 5 fawns a year. Or 3 to 5 adult. They can
kill. And they've made a big impact. Some of the studies done in the southeast, down in South Carolina.
80%.
80% of that fawn mortality caused by coyotes.
Coyotes.
It's just been amazing.
So you can really gain access to property you've never had before. And just remember, this is the time of year. February 15th is the peak of the rut for the coyote. And so you can really go out there right now, use these, you know, I take this diaphragm, Rob, and I pop it. And I call it the estrus yip. Into an estrus whimper, I call it. Then I'll play Coyote Pup Screams on a Fox Pro Coyote Pup Distress 3. I guarantee you, if anybody's out there listening, if you want to kill a coyote in February, go out there and make some high-pitched pops, yips, and estrus whimpers, and then get that Coyote Pup Screams, Coyote Pup Distress 3. Do some lone female yodel howl, female soar howls, and I guarantee you, you will get coyotes running in, and you can really do some serious management on these areas. If you want to grow turkeys, if you want to grow deer, if you want to grow pheasants, if you want to grow quail, get out there and get to hunting these coyotes. It's real important to do your part.
Is there a time of day that's better than another?
What I've noticed, my favorite stand of the day, Rob, is the first stand. As soon as that light cracks, I think those coyotes are hungry. They're stretching. They're up. They're moving. They want to eat. They want to put something in their belly. And so that first stand of the day, if I had a second favorite stand, it's the last stand of the day. Just that sun's going down.
Yeah.
You always, that iconic hearing them howl in the distance.
Sure.
You know, they really do move at first light and at last light. But as long as it's below 60 degrees, I think they'll run all day long. Here we've got this Arctic cold snap throughout the country. You guys have got cold where you've never had cold before. Get out there and take advantage of it. Get out there and hunt these animals. And educate yourself. Me and Rob could sit here and talk for days about how to help you out, but you need to get out there and do some of this. Your trial and error yourself. Find somebody, you know, the mentors, the guys that take that 5 minutes of their time and teach you something. That means more to me than anything. And so hopefully somebody takes this and maybe it burns a little passion in them to get out and try it just once, and they may be hooked for life.
Well, there's no doubt. There's going to be somebody out there that watches you on a YouTube video that says, I want to be like Al Morris. And it will launch them into a career just like it has done for you. And, you know, when we look at the situation that we're faced with, you know, with increased social media rants out there against hunting. Talk to us just a little bit here before we close out the show on this obligation that we have as hunters to present ourselves as responsible, ethical, following the game laws. We're not poachers. Talk to us a little bit about that, Al.
Respect the game. Respect the animal. Don't put pictures on social media that Project Coyote can put on their website and say, look what these hunters are doing to these poor, defenseless animals. You know, don't put the tasteless pictures up on social media. I don't care if you want to, you know, hold your coyote up, the tail, the fluffy tail. I mean, that's a great picture. Don't show the pictures of the blood, the gore, the open wounds on a head of a coyote or a deer. We have a responsibility. 70% of the people out there don't hunt or fish, you know, and they're going to decide our futures. And their image of respect them, respect their right to not hunt and fish. I'm glad they don't. It means more for me and you, Rob. We can get out there and do it. But we do need to – we have a responsibility. I don't want to hide. I love being a hunter. The best people I've ever met are hunters and fishermen. And so be proud. And remember, we're all rowing the same boat, whether we're traditional bow hunters, compound bow hunters, muzzle loaders, whether it's a flintlock or a inline that'll shoot 300 yards, rifle hunters. We're all rowing the same boat. We really need to come together and show society. The only reason we humans have made it through the years is because we were hunters, and I want to keep doing it forever.
Al Morris, I'll tell you what, you're an inspiration. Thanks so much for being with us today. Congratulations on this latest Golden Moose, on your four-time World Coyote Calling Championships. And, folks, that's going to wrap it up here on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World. I'm Rob Keck. On behalf of Bass Pro Shops, your adventure always starts right here. Thanks for answering the call. I've called to preserving our rich hunting, fishing, and trapping heritage. We'll see you next week.
This has been Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World, talking all things outdoors, brought to you by Bass Pro Shops, your outdoor leader. Join us next Saturday and every Saturday for more special guests and unique locations.